This is the Empty Stands Podcast.
What we're going to discuss on this episode is the just concluded weekend, as match week 24 of the Premier League, as well as that very emotional AFCON final between Nigeria and Cote d'Ivoire. I'll start by introducing my guests. The first is a very passionate supporter of Arsenal, and whenever he's not supporting Arsenal, he's giving very unbiased football opinions. Hi, Esosa. How are you doing?
I'm doing very great. Arsenal has really been playing well of recent, so I'm good. I'm very good.
It's great to have you here, Sosa. And my second guest is someone that I consider to be a big body of knowledge for anything football, especially in Africa. Hi, Uyi. How are you doing? I think you're one of the few Milan fans that I know. How are you doing, Uyi?
Yeah, nice to have me, Buka. How are you doing also? I'm fine. Nice to be here.
I'm doing well, recovering from the AFCON final that we saw together. But don't worry, we'll get into that as we move further in the episode. We'll quickly touch on the Premier League because the focus is actually that AFCON final. But just so that we cover that the Premier League, I want to look at the league table and let's have, you know, some conversations on how we see the league ending. We've played 24 games, except for City that have played 23, but it's very, very tight at the top of the table. Liverpool are just ahead with 54 points, Man City second, 52 with the game in hand, and Arsenal third, level on points with City on 52 points as well. And there's Tottenham not so far away, 5 points up off the top three with 47 points. But I'll start with you, Esosa. As an Arsenal fan, seeing your team dismantle West Ham, you know, making that statement to say, guys, we're in this and we are going to fight till the very end. How do you see the league table shaping up as we head further down in the season? Do you think Arsenal have what it takes to keep the pressure on Liverpool and City and maybe even win the league?
Okay, I remember at the start of the season, I made some predictions and I said Arsenal were not going to win the league, right? I'm still standing by that prediction, that Arsenal are not going to win the league. And the reason why I'm saying that is because we have a very strong very strong squad, right? But the problem we have is most of the important players that can help Arteta with his rotation are injury prone. I mean, you have Zinchenko injury prone, Partey injury prone. Let's never talk about Partey. Gabriel Jesus injury prone, Tomiyasu injury prone. And these are four different positions. Like, these are players who occupy four different positions and play different roles in the team, right? So if we can keep just Partey, Tomiyasu injury free to the end of the season, then I believe that we have an outside chance. But I still strongly believe that Man City would win this league. They have the mentality to really push. You know, they can just go on a 13 match win streak and then that's it. Right? So they have that mentality. Arsenal don't have the mentality. Liverpool should have it, but we all watched the game Arsenal played against Liverpool, and we saw that Liverpool, they have they are a bit ordinary at times, and you can't be ordinary and topple Man City in this league chase, right? So I still believe that it's going to be Man City's fourth trophy in a row.
You know, speaking of City, we saw their win against Everton, and it was the return to form of Erling Haaland. If you really want to call him returning to form, he has been injured though, but he did score. He did score in the last game, the Brentford game, where Phil Foden stole the show with that hat trick. But Erling Haaland did the business, scored the goals that gave City the 3 points. And you're right, it's going to be a tricky one. But to my listeners, as I said, Esosa gives very unbiased opinions, right? And you can imagine an Arsenal fan saying that Arsenal will not win the league. That is tough. I'm sure the Arsenal community would not be happy with you, Esosa, but let's see how it goes. Okay, I know you are very passionate about Milan and the Serie A, but you do watch the Premier League. You're following the competition. From the neutral perspective, how do you see the league playing out? Who do you think is going to win the league?
Well, I think so far it's been a very competitive season. I would say, as usual, when it's February, you always get Man City bouncing back and becoming more consistent. They've won 5 out of 5 now. But let's not write off Arsenal or Liverpool. So for me, I think it's a 3-horse race, and it's going to be tough, especially a match for Man City. Man City is going to be playing very difficult games. They're playing Liverpool, they're playing Manchester United, they're playing Arsenal and Brighton, all in match. So let's not write off Arsenal yet. Arsenal is still consistent, they have 4-5. Liverpool, the same thing. They have easier matches during the period. So I think the why I love Man City is that when they are consistent, they keep it to the end. So even if they have these hurdles coming up, I see them overcoming these hurdles, and end of the day, I tip Man City for the trophy. But let's not write off Arsenal. I know people always say Arsenal would not deliver at the end of the day, they would struggle, but you can't tell. We have more than 24 weeks gone now, and we're almost at the finish line. And if Arsenal can just keep up that consistency to the end of the season, and who knows, might be another time to celebrate for them. It's been a long time coming.
It really has been a long time coming, and City faced Chelsea at the weekend. So if Chelsea were a serious team, I'd have said, oh, my team would do Arsenal a favor, but I can't bet you that City is going to beat the hell out of Chelsea. So I'm sorry, Esosa. Sorry to the Arsenal fans. Chelsea is not going to be doing you any favors. We would love to, but I don't think we can. Quickly want to touch on, players that have made an impact so far, new signings that have come into their respective clubs, and they've stepped up to the challenge that is Premier League football. Give an example of Chelsea, Cole Palmer stepping up to deliver. Declan Rice for Arsenal, even though, yes, he's familiar with the league, but he's a new signing, and he doesn't feel like a new signing because he's just been so immense and so important for Arsenal, and is really pushing their title charge in his own way. And for Manchester United, we've seen Rasmus Højlund get on the scoring sheet now consistently. So it's fair to say that he's adapted to the league and he's now starting to show himself. Those are just a few examples, but I want to hear from you, Esosa. Is there any new signing that has really convinced you this season?
I think the guys that have really surprised me are all in Tottenham, right? Maddison and Van de Ven. Those are I'm trying to avoid the usual suspects. Declan Rice is definitely going to be there, right? He's going to be there for signing of the season. But he's £100 million signing, right? You definitely should expect that from him. But then Maddison and Van de Ven, they've really shocked me. Maddison, for the fact that he's been asked to play a slightly different role in Tottenham, right? He's not playing, he's like a natural 10. That's what he has always played at Leicester. But now he plays as a left central midfielder. So he drops deep to conduct play alongside Bissouma or Papissar, right? And he has done it very, very well. I thought they were going to struggle. I thought he was going to struggle, but man, the guy has really, really surprised me. Then Van de Ven too. I actually did not know he existed before, and Tottenham just bought this guy from Germany for about 15 million. I'm like, oh well, let's see. Maybe it's just another signing. And he has actually been very good. And I think the drop in Tottenham's form, that period when they dropped form and lost a couple of matches, coincided with his ACL. If he has been available all along, I think Tottenham would actually still be in the conversation for the title. They will still be in the conversation, but he's back, and they are trying their best. But I can say he has really, really impressed me. Then apart from the usual suspect, Rice, Højlund, I've not really. I know the Rasmus Højlund is definitely going to be someone very big, but this season he hasn't really hit those hit that peak yet. So Van de Ven and Maddison, those are my guys.
Again, another rare sighting, an Arsenal fan picking Tottenham players. No, but I like the picks that you made. Maddison is a player that I really like. Van de Ven, I had heard about him. Football Manager fans would have maybe coached him sometime in the past, but you know, seeing him play from that very first game, I was like, okay, yeah, this guy is good. And it's very good to see him really settling into the league and join Haaland in the league of those players that are trying to prove that the Bundesliga is not just the Farmers League. So yes, you know, I'm happy about that pick as well. Uyi, what about you?
Okay, so far I think some players have impressed me, that he has already mentioned, as has mentioned. But I'll mention my own favorites so far this season. Number one is Jeremy Doku. In as much as that wing has been occupied by Grealish, he's still bringing an added value to that position at Man City. Bringing the best out of Jack Grealish, I'll say that. I won't say trying to upstage him. He's been one of my favorite players this season. He's shown character and always delivering when he needed to deliver. Another player that I love is Cole Palmer. He has mentioned that already. He has been exciting so far for Chelsea. And he has already proved the point that Man City missed making the best out of him during this time. I would say one player that I really, really love that is not really on the popular side, apart from the major players, I would say is Ross Barkley. Ross Barkley has done a fantastic job for Luton Town. He has came from Nice with an underwhelming season last season and came in and has really taken the team to, I won't say greater heights, but has given spirit to the team and has given more motivation and more purpose to the Luton midfield entirely. And I've really been impressed with what he has been doing, and maybe hopefully he should consider back to the England team. He has been really an inspiration to the team. Declan Rice also for Arsenal too has also proved his mettle and proved his worth. And I know it was bought for a lot of money, but he has really added value to the Arsenal team. So these are the few players. Then one other player I would also mention is Mohamed Kudus. Let's not forget him. Mohamed Kudus has been impressive also for West Ham, and he's already a fan favorite and the cult hero at the club already.
Yeah, there have been some really good picks. Thank you guys very much. Last question in this PL section is what team do you feel has underperformed and why? And I know the easy answer is Chelsea, but please, let's be guided. I'm a Chelsea fan. This is still my show. I can bounce anybody out to bounce from the studio. But yeah, if you want to go at Chelsea, that's fine as well. But just let me know your worst performing team. So I'll start with you.
Okay. Let me avoid Chelsea as you asked. I think the pick for me is Brighton. Right, last season they were there. Do you know they had plenty gra-gra? Everybody thought they were going to be, challenging for the champions, for Champions League spots this season. See, the eye don't clear. They now play. They play Europa football, and it was like the schedule was too much for them. It was heavy, and they couldn't rotate because the players were not there to rotate. And this is the problem with smaller clubs that crave for European football. They actually don't know how difficult it is to play European football, whereby you need like a squad full of 7 over 10 players to actually balance European football and league football, right? So Brighton is the, like, they've really underperformed for me. Although I know most of their underperformance is due to the fact that they lost Caicedo, then they lost Colwill. Is it Colwill? Yeah, they lost Lewis Colwill, and they've not been able to replace them effectively, right? So Chelsea too. I mean, although I know the large part of the 1 billion that Chelsea spent was not on their first team, right? But everybody will always use that as a whip, and I will use that as a whip every damn time, because why are you trying to develop a sporting universe when you've not built the main team that's going to bring all the funds for that sporting universe? It doesn't make sense, right? So, and then I don't know if they would ever get it right, because I'm already seeing a lot of players being linked to Chelsea, and I'm like, you guys really should not be running to go and buy players now, because you still need to work and find a way to make the guys that you've bought work. So Brighton and Chelsea for me.
Okay, fair enough, and I agree with you on the Chelsea bit. There's a bit of a planning issue for me. Some Chelsea fans can't see the vision, and they can see the logic behind some of the decisions. I struggle because I would always prefer to have the team ready now while still building for the future. But instead, they've chosen to build for the future, forgetting about the now. But we'll get there. The thing is, with a young team, you can expect inconsistencies, which is what we've experienced over the course of the season. The game you expect them to lose, they win. The game you expect them to win, they lose. It just happens. But Pochettino is at the helm. Some Chelsea fans don't agree with the work that he's done. Some agree with it. Some don't agree with certain players being in the team. But, you know, that's just how it is. We'll keep on having, you know, things like this until maybe at the end of the season, when things become a lot clearer. Will Pochettino get an extra year? Will certain players leave the club? All that will be sorted at the end of the season. So we'll just see how it goes. The club is in the FA Cup, in the Carabao Cup final, to be fair to them. And they're still in the FA Cup. So let's see how that goes for Chelsea. Uy, what about you? Most underperforming Premier League team?
Yeah, and Chelsea's in the mention, but I don't think Chelsea should actually be in the mention. Let's not forget that Chelsea was 12th last season. So it's not surprising to me. If a team is 12th last season, you don't expect them to win the league, even if they've done some investments and all that. But I think Chelsea is actually a work in progress, and we should give them time. For Brighton lost a lot of players. They sold a lot of players, and they brought new players in, which didn't cost as much in terms of market value as those players that left. And so far, they're doing an average job, and to looking at Brighton's level, I don't think they're doing too bad. But the team that strikes me out as a team that is disappointing me this season, in my own opinion, is Newcastle. Coming from where they were last season, they were third last season, they were in the Champions League, compared to Champions League, playing good football, but this season they have been so inconsistent. And we can give them the excuse that, okay, there were a lot of injuries coming in and out, but they have a lot of players to show squad depth, but unfortunately, they last in the Champions League, they were knocked out of Champions League and even the Europa. So they don't even have the excuse of having double shifts. So we'll see from now to the end of the season whether they are able to have a response and finish in a very comfortable position, because that's what's expected of them at the moment. Eddie Howe has done a good job, but the consistency showing so far, one begins to question, is he the man for Newcastle in the long run? So let's wait and see at the end of the season where they are counted and where they are positioned. Hopefully, I expect them to have a top five finish, which is something that will be acceptable based on the way they have started this whole campaign in the new era of the new owners. But I think there's still enough time for teams to revive their season, even Chelsea, Brighton, and even Newcastle, and some of the lower teams to escape relegation. But it's going to be an interesting season all the same.
Yes, and you touched on something that I'm also concerned about. That question about Eddie Howe. Is he the right man to take Newcastle to where they should be, or where they think they should be? I've always looked at him as that manager that kind of sets the tone for a world-class manager to come in and really push the team forward. Jesus, I don't know if you share the same view.
Definitely. Eddie Howe, for all his wonderful exuberance, for his beautiful football, he is not a project completer. He doesn't have the ability to take a project, build it, and then complete it. You know, I mean the big years. The tactics he employs, they are good, right? But they only work when Newcastle play against teams that are not very athletic, right? So the moment Newcastle meet teams that can actually run like they run, then it's a struggle. It's a big, big struggle. This is why they struggle against all the big teams, right? They struggle to a very large extent against the big teams. This is also why they struggled in the Champions League. Right? Teams that actually have the players that have the lungs to run as much as your guys can run. And that is basically all Newcastle. Okay, not all they depend on, but that's a major part of their strategy, which is run, you know, just run and show that passion and everything. So I think he would his talent ID is not also like top notch. Buying Tonali was a questionable move to me, because I felt like they did not exactly need what Tonali offers. They would have been better off buying a player who could actually sit and defend, someone like Youssouf Fofana of Monaco. They could have done very well getting that guy, but then going for Tonali. So his talent ID and his ability to complete that project are very, very questionable. So Newcastle would do well to, you know, just count their losses. Well, no, they don't really count any losses because he has done so well for them. So they should definitely move forward, look for someone else.
Thanks, Isosa. And with that, we will conclude the PL section of this episode. I will move into the AFCON section. Guys, on Sunday, there were lots of emotions. Before the game, we felt a bit confident. Some of us were anxious, worried.
I was never confident.
But then... Are you serious? You were never confident?
Nah.
Why?
We watched Nigeria all through the tournament. We were very lucky, right? We played horrible football from day one to day last. We were lucky. All we did was, where's Osimhen? Collect ball, boot the ball to Osimhen, and hope Osimhen fights the entire world to keep the ball for our wingers to come into play. The distance between the attack and the midfield was so wide. That's why Iwobi was always exposed. And Ivory Coast, they actually studied it. Ivory Coast played with a four-man midfield, and we played two-man midfield, and our wingers were so far away from it. Like, it was so disjointed. So we were lucky. I believe that if we play this AFCON 10 more times, we are not going to even get to the finals up to 9 times.
That's a very bold claim, SSR. But I can see the logic there. We did play some not so entertaining football. But I want to hear from you. What were your thoughts about the Nigerian team as a whole and your reaction to the results of the final?
Okay. I've been watching the African Nations Cup for a long time now. And one thing I always tell people is that to win the African Nations Cup, it's not just about your ability and kind of players you have. You need to have a psychological edge and mental strength to win it. I don't know the problem with the Nigerian national team, why we're always falling short every time we get to, for the most of the time. You can see the number of silver and gold bronze medals we have. It's not too impressive. You have countries that go there. Cote d'Ivoire won their first AFCON in 1992, and they're already three up. They're already three gold medals up. Same as us. We won our first gold medal in 1980. So a lot of questions need to be asked. How do we approach mentally this kind of big matches? I won't lie to you, when Cote d'Ivoire beat Senegal, I was always supporting the team that Cote d'Ivoire was playing against, because I did not want I wanted them to be out quickly. Even as much as the first round, when they had 2 points, I wanted them to go out, because I knew that the pressure will be too much on us. The home team, we've played them before, they're looking, seeking for revenge, and they'll be more motivated because they just qualified by the hook of the neck. And at the end of the day, these are the things that proved to be too difficult for us. Apart from the non-football factors, but I will now go to the football factors. Tactically, I don't think we got it right on the day, and the approach to the game was very poor. First of all, if you look at the first game we played against Cote d'Ivoire midfielders, what they do is that they try to make it press. Cote d'Ivoire plays a high press and try to press us, to press those defenders, to disturb our central defenders from properly distributing the ball. In that way, we get our balls to the double pivot to now distribute it straight to the attackers. In that way, we are able to bypass them in midfield and get the ball to Simen or Lookman or anybody that is there in front. But I think they studied us very well, the new coach, and changed the approach in a way that he has brought in Seri, Michael Seri, who has done a fantastic job for him. Seri now, what he does is that he's like a ball winner, wins the ball, and he controls the tempo of the match, allowing people like Fofana and Kessi to roam around and take away our wing backs, drag our wing backs, and create space for their wingers, which is Max Cradell and Adringa. And that was done all the match. So, and the mistake we made was that we have stuck with people who could mark at the wings. We started with Chukwueze. I love Chukwueze, he's my player, but I don't think it was the right player to start at that particular moment. Then they would have started Simon and instructed him to always sit at the wing and mark with Ola, you know. But that was not being done. They wanted to stick to going to the midfield to also distribute the ball and help the midfield, but it wasn't really coordinated. And at the end of the Ivorians, they were able to coordinate the midfield, control the tempo, and that was the mistake. Once Ivorians coordinated the tempo, they started getting motivation from their team, from their the thought about getting revenge with Nigeria and all that. So they were fully motivated. They were physically fit and they were up for the task. So that was just one of the challenges. And at the end of the day, they started giving Adringa too much space to run. Initially, the first match, I saw a situation whereby Ola Aina and Semi Ajayi would block the left side. But I didn't see that happening. Semi Ajayi was always in the middle of the pitch. And and the fullback was always not available to support Ola Aina. Especially when Ola Aina was struggling in that match, he was tired. So I expected Ola Aina to have been taken out by halftime. You're bringing in someone fresh, someone like Awazem, who is very strong on the ball, and look at Mark Adringa. So that was key to the match. So at the end of the day, I think the coach needs to understand that being proactive, it's good to have information, but you need to be proactive once that formation fails, and which the coach didn't. The coach reacted late, and unfortunately, I wanted us to win this AFCON. It was very painful because it was a very free AFCON. You have very big teams like Morocco, Senegal, even Egypt, not doing well, even Ghana. So it was like Senegal dropped the AFCON trophy on the floor for anybody to pick. And there was nobody to pick it after 2 days. Then Cote d'Ivoire came and said, oh, this is a trophy on the ground, and picked it up. That's why I look at the AFCON. And I think there are a lot of lessons to be learned. I know recently there have been a lot of bashing on Iwobi. Yeah, I supported Iwobi throughout the tournament because he was playing deep and was trying to distribute the ball. But in the final, I expected him to step up his game and hold the ball more confidently. Just like what Mikel Obi does. I know it's not Mikel Obi, but hope the ball more confidently, cause more fouls and waste more time, push the ball forward. Because he's the one that is meant to do what Seri is doing for Cote d'Ivoire. Create the tempo and push the team forward. But he wasn't doing that. He was sitting back and trying to wait for them to come at him. That was no wrong. If he takes the ball out, the other wing backs will have to come with him. And that we are pushing the team forward. But I think it's too late to cry now. And unfortunately, we just have to go back to the drawing board and hope for that our World Cup qualifiers are better than this. But end of the silver medal is better than none. I know Africa is trolling us about winning silver medal, but there are many teams that they don't want to match in two AFCONs. I won't call their name. So let them go and do their own homework.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Uy. So I want to get your thoughts on the manager of the Nigerian national team. We saw him try to, you know, change, or he did change his tactics after the first game, because the game against Equatorial Guinea, we had a different setup. And from that moment on, he went with this 3-4-3 setup, which took us all the way to the final. Yes, the football wasn't great, but it was effective. it was more or less it is a results-driven business, and he was getting the results. What are your thoughts on the manager? Do you think he is the right person to, you know, take us through the World Cup qualifiers and ultimately coach Nigeria at the World Cup if we get there?
Well, I don't think he's the right person because it's criminal, very, very criminal to play Iwobi in a double pivot. It's criminal. It should be punishable by prison sentence. To play Iwobi in a double pivot is very criminal. The only reason why it worked for us was because we were ultra defensive all through the entire competition. We're ultra defensive and then just depended solely on the magic from Moses Simon and Osimhen. That's all we depended on. Osimhen played with passion. He played with everything inside of him. Like, he was literally playing with a third engine, you know. And you expect to see the best out of him when he's fighting some of, like, these defenses he's coming up against are like extremely physical defenses. African defenders are not there to play. They're not inside the corner, pass the ball from the back. You know, technical. They just want to boot the ball out. Even if you carry your technical ability and you come from your club, once you get it to African football, you drop it and boot the ball away, right? Because the other players don't have that. It's not everybody on the team that has that same technical background. I'm not really in touch with the national team's business, so I don't know the coaches that are hot. I would definitely want the guy who won the trophy with Cote d'Ivoire and Zambia. Hevrenard, yes, Hevrenard, that's his name. I definitely would want Hevrenard. But Shay is every day we are seeing that there's no dollar in Nigeria. Every single day, I should say. Dollar not day. So I don't know how we are going to pay the guy. Right. I think I saw somewhere when they said he earns about $150,000 per month. This one is earning $50,000 per month, and I don't know if we can triple it. But if we can, then that guy should be our first. It should be our first pick because he's coaching the French women team. I think it's the women team that he's currently coaching. But he definitely should be our pick. He should be going for him. But if we can't, I don't know. I really don't know.
I want to touch on, you know, a player that missed out on the AFCON. In Boniface, right? Do you think he and maybe other players that should have made the squad but didn't, do you think that they could have changed the story? I know for one, I suspect that if Boniface was fit, the manager would have been tempted to play two up front. That's my feeling. But what are your thoughts on that?
Yes, I agree with you. I believe that if Boniface was in the team, it would have changed the coach's approach to the match. To the AFCON matches, because one, he would have tempted to play two up front, and Boniface is very good at playing the supporting striker role. He's a very adaptable player, so I would have seen him playing behind Osimhen, while also doubling up and covering that space in between the midfield and the attack, and that central midfield and the attack, because that's where most of our spaces were. So most of the time, Lookman had to go and fill in that position and overwork himself. So I think. Would have played more attacking football. But I understand where the coach was coming from. He wanted to get the best result possible based on the pressure he was on, the promises he had made. He needed to have a very fantastic AFCON. But at the end of the day, as Sosa said, going forward, is this how we want to be playing? We cannot play like this. So we might just have to move forward and get another coach. Or he just has to have an agreement that, okay, you're going to change your tactics, change your approach you play, and let's go back to our attacking football and actually improve on our attacking football. Because we have a lot of... It's funny that a country that has more than 13 to 14 strikers now doing very well in Europe is playing only one striker. And it's not getting service. So it's funny. You know, Cote d'Ivoire brought in Max Gradel and Adringa at both sides of the wing just to feed Haller. Haller is very slow. And with those players are very fast. Though Max Gradel is not as fast as before, when he was quite popular in the championship in England. But at least he still had that speed. One thing I also noticed was that we focus too much attention on Haller. That was one of our underdoings. Instead of Semi Ajayi to support usually the right back position, I think he was more centralized this time around, trying to mark Haller. And unfortunately, it didn't work out for us. So I would say at the end of the day, it's the hard times gone by, and we need to focus on the future. And the future, hopefully, is looking bright for us. So I think all things work for good of the Super Eagles. That's my own parable.
Amen. Esosa, who in the Nigerian squad was your, you know, best player? Who do you think really stood out for us in this tournament?
Osimhen. Very straightforward, Osimhen. And the reason why I said he stood out for me is because we left him alone. Like, we let that guy play all alone, all by himself. Definitely, he was not very clinical with his chances. But Osimhen's ability to really pin, like, he would pin down four defenders. They won't be able to really just jump up and support the attack because of the fact that this guy can run down the flanks with the ball. He can run down the middle with the ball. So there was always that fear that other teams had. And that also contributed to our defensive resilience. Right. Definitely, there's the temptation to call Trostekong, but Trostekong was part of a very solid unit, very solid defensive unit. And if you are playing in a team that is defend first, then you definitely would have very high numbers if you are a professional defender. So to me, Osimhen was our guy, and Trostekong comes next, then we can look at Calvin Bassey and the other guys. Yeah.
Okay, fair choice. Uyi, what about you?
I would say Trostekong. Trostekong put all his mind into the tournament. He was very serious. He knew what he wanted. He put his best towards. Remember, this was a player that was almost dropped. He was not been even invited in the last three Nigeria matches. I'm sure that he wouldn't have gone to the tournament if CAF asked for 23 players. The reason was that there were extra slots to make him and Musa go. I'm sure told them about being the one that were dropped. So, and he ended up becoming the MVP. So I think that should be a lesson to the coach. I think sometimes the coach can be a bit stubborn. There are a lot of players that should actually be invited, but he just ignores them on the whole. I don't know why. Someone like Cyril Desas of Rangers, I don't know why he stopped inviting him. People like Tyrone Eboy should come back to the team. If we knew we were going to play this kind of formation, Tyrone Eboy is one of the best players for this kind of tactic because he's fast, he can return fast quickly, he knows how to mark and all that. So I'm surprised that if you are going to play, bring back people that can play wing-backs. And also, one thing that bothered me most was the inability and lack of trust in Bruno Yimichi. I don't know why. Someone who played all your qualifying games, he comes to the big tournament and you don't have trust in him. So a lot of players were overworked because the coach had lack of trust in other players. And that was our biggest undoing. Sometimes you give players that kind of trust and tell them, okay, go and do this. And because of your trust, they are able to deliver. I remember in 1994 Nations Cup, we brought in Amunike for his first match in the final. Came into the AFCON final as his debut, first match in the tournament, and he scored two goals for Nigeria. So some coaches actually, they know their onions and know how to motivate players and know how to bring them in. So we just came with the same lethargy squad that were tired. Eli Nol's legs were tired. Everybody was tired. So I thought we'd just bring in someone like Bruno, bring in Awazem, the kind of mentality that can play final. People like Omero who have played finals before, you know how to handle things. And playing three defenders is not the best option. I know why he played three defenders. But his inability to sort out the two starting defenders for Nigeria, that has been the problem. Who and who are the two starting defenders? I know initially he has been using Bassey and Semi Ajayi, but it has not been working. And he couldn't give the full trust to those two players. So we need to sort out those two defenders so we can go back to back four. Because we are wasting players in the middle. We need to add more players in the middle. And one other thing is that there are other players in Europe. We have someone like Mikel Olise. We should try and talk to him. It would be a perfect fit in that attacking midfield. You understand? Because Aribo would have played there, but I don't think Aribo is in form. I didn't see any tangible thing at this Nations Cup. Though he's a great player and he didn't have enough playing time. But when I look at players like Chukwuemeka Kani, people like Mikel Olise, and see how we can enforce the midfield. That would be great for us ahead of the World Cup qualifiers.
personally, as a Chelsea fan, I'd love to see Kanny Chukwuemeka play for Nigeria. So if anyone is related to him, I call him my cousin. But if anyone else is related to him, please speak to him. Let him play for Nigeria. So as we round up, I just want to know, it seemed over the years that we had a goalkeeping problem in Nigeria. We had Madika Okoye, the fine boy, that, you know, suffered online abuse after that game against Tunisia some years ago. And Uzoho just seems like, you know, he can make a mistake, and that mistake could be so important, and everyone starts raining abuses. I think that's something that we need to deal with. We like to insult our players, but sometimes emotions run hot. Do you think that with Nwabali now, we have that, you know, goalkeeper that we can count on, that we can rely on? Or do you still think that we need to have our eyes open for another goalkeeper?
In terms of the goalkeeping section, Nwabali, when he was brought into the team, everybody was okay. Some people were saying, yes, it's a good welcome development, while others were a bit skeptical based on they hadn't seen much of him and he was in the South African League, which wasn't really rated in terms of international football, though they're one of the best leagues in Africa. But surprisingly, he was able to give his best, in my own opinion. I think he did very well. In as much as it's not the finished product to me, he was able to show one thing that I love, which is mental strength and confidence. So, and that's where it comes in. When you're playing big tournaments, you have to have that mental strength. He was comfortable with the goal kicks, was comfortable with corner kicks, was comfortable with the basics of football, and that's very important for a goalkeeper. So, and he also had good positioning. So I think so far he did very well, and he actually earned his onions in tournaments. But that notwithstanding, we still need to. There are a lot of players in goalkeepers in Europe that I still rate that should brought to the team. I think Maduka should come back to the national team, in as much as there's been a controversy over his attitude. Because I know he was invited in the friendly matches against Saudi Arabia and Mozambique. But after that, he stopped coming to the team, even though he was invited. I don't know why. I'm not depressed. So I can't have the real reasons or the coach itself. So I think he should be brought back to the team. So that there should be strong competition. And the coach also should trust players. It's very important. Because if you don't trust players, how are you going to have a team? You keep on playing the same players and they keep on getting tired. So you must have your trust in players. Trust them, play them, play like in friendly matches. We played against Saudi Arabia and Mozambique. In as much as Izzo was the first choice, I don't think Izzo would have kept the first two matches. You understand? It would have allowed Maduka Okoye to keep the second match or somebody else so we could see him. So that we don't come into a competition and start experimenting with formation, experimenting with defensive lineup, experimenting with goalkeepers. It shouldn't be. You know, all these things would have been started out before the tournament. So we went to the Nations Cup and started applying experiments with the goalkeeper, with defensive formation, with who will play fullback. No, I don't think it works that way. That's why I was being skeptical about returning the coach. The coach has to, if they could want to return the coach because of what he's done, fine. But he has to change his approach towards handling the team. It's very, very important. You understand? Because there are a lot of, you need to test these players and give them confidence so you know exactly what they're, especially in the goalkeeping department. You have a player like Adeleye. Adeleye is keeping in Israel. He's a very good goalkeeper. He's very good at handling the ball. He's a very good shot stopper. He's very good with his legs. Invite him also. So I mean, I recommend people like Adeleye and Okoye to come back to the national team to create competition for Nwabali and also Uzo. Those four goalkeepers, I think they are more than enough for us to carry us for the next 4 or 5 years.
I agree with you. There needs to be some change in how the coach is handling the players that he has at his disposal. And also, there's a lot of work for the NFF president and the NFF at large to reach out to certain players and get them to commit to playing for Nigeria. Because if we have a very good national pool of talents, then it's a better selection from the coach. He can pick, you know, top quality, best of the best, if I can say that. Because we do have some outstanding players from Nigeria. To round this up, so I just want to know your thoughts on the online abuse that Alex Iwobi suffered after that final.
Okay, so the abuse was definitely horrible. Shouldn't be found anywhere. I mean, these guys are, regardless of the fact that they are paid millions to do this job, but they are human beings too. We can't outrule that fact. They are human beings. So we really need to be, we need to draw a line between criticism and abuse. Right, we criticize players every day. Players are criticized every day, but we just need to know when to stop, when to just put a halt to the entire thing. Right, but I saw a lot of people saying a lot of things like, "Oh no, this would stop. This would hamper Nigeria's chances of getting these foreign trained players to come and represent Nigeria." And all I'm just saying is that, man, that's rubbish. That's rubbish talk, because Nigeria is not the only country that actually participates in online abuse. I mean, we all watched the Euros. We saw how Saka and Maguire and how they all were abused, regardless of this, of your skin. If you're black, it's even worse. Racial abuses almost 10 times worse than any other person would face in real life. So it's normal everywhere. People should really just stop trying to make this all about, "Oh, Nigerians are this, Nigerians are..." No, the world is like that. People are the same all over the world. You know, people are vile everywhere. These guys, even if they choose to represent England, whoever they choose to represent, if they play bad, they will be abused. It's a normal thing, right? And this is why a lot of players have psychologists, like, who are their pay. They also have people who manage their social media, you know, delete abuse as soon as it hits their Instagram and all that. Iwobi's way of handling it, I can't fault him. I can't say, "Oh, he should be more mature or whatever." That's by deleting all his Instagram posts, because I mean, I don't know how it affected him. So if he deleted it like that, then I mean, if that helps him to really overcome the abuse, then that's fine. It's fine. So Nigerians, please stop bringing down your fellow people saying you abuse too much. It's the same everywhere. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Esosa. Thank you, Uyi. And with that, we've come to the end of this episode. Again, guys, you've made this episode or what it is. Thank you so much for bringing your insights and your A game on this episode. I am so humbled to be here with two people that I truly respect their football opinion. Thank you, Esosa. Thank you very much, Uyi, for being with me on this episode. And to our listeners, we are The Empty Stands. You can follow us on Twitter at The Empty Stands and on Instagram at The Empty Stands Podcast. Let's have a fantastic week ahead. And later on this week, we would be dropping the preview for Game Week 25. That would be done by Reward and Nkem, who are our resident FPL experts. I'm terrible at FPL. That's why I never feature on any of those episodes. But thank you so much for sticking with us. It's bye for now. Cheers.